because I know the story is not over with their judgment. We have made this statement. Somebody who has a handicap, we've talked about them as, well, that's their cross to bear. And that's a modern vernacular idiom, but that is not what Jesus is talking about. He's talking about a voluntary act, not something that's thrust on you that if you could change it, you would. He's saying you make a deliberate choice when you want to be with me, that you're willing to go wherever that takes, even if that means into a place of pain or even a place of shame. I don't think most of us are going to have to face the level of shame that these guys did or that Jesus did. I don't know. They may not come to that. But there are little deaths and smaller amounts of shame, such as when people look at you like you have no brains. What kind of an idiot are you that you'd swallow that whole Jesus stuff? That hurts. I'm not stupid. And I've spent a lot of my life investigating this before I made my commitment to him. So it wasn't something that I'm just an idiot and I'd follow whoever says, hey, follow me. But that's the way you're treated, isn't it? And because there are arrogant, obnoxious people who say they're Christians, I have to deal with their reproach as well. I'm constantly running into people who don't want anything to do with church because of the way some church person has treated them. When they find out that I'm a minister, then they automatically expect, oh, you're one of those arrogant, obnoxious people. So that's part of the shame. But that's not because of Jesus. That's because of other people that are wearing Jesus' name. So he says, you want to be with me? It's not going to go right now the way you think. It's going to go. And of course, they all abandoned him. And Peter denied that he even was his friend when they were faced with it. Follow me. We talked about this a little bit last week. I'll give you the Oswald Chambers quote that I gave you last week because it's so poignant. He said, we cannot call ourselves followers of Jesus if we are taking the initiative. Because followers follow. Duh, right? I mean, isn't that just logical? But it's remarkable to me how many Americans, especially in this century, in our culture, who say they are followers of Jesus, and yet they're still living the way they want to live. They're making their decisions without his input. Churches operate that way. Jesus isn't even invited to be on the committees or the board, much less have the overriding vote. So how can I say I'm a follower of Jesus if he's following me? Akoluthete is the verb, follow. I just love saying that. It makes me sound so smart. You want me to spell it, Sandra? Oh, she's previously disposed. Akoluthete. Akoluthete. Mouse. Akoluthete. It's a word of companionship and conformity to his example. The Amplified Bible says, cling steadfastly to me and conform wholly to my example. One little thing I want to point out, I didn't say it last week. This is a good time to say it. It's interesting that before he laid down these terms, he made clear who he was. See, I know a lot of people that don't want to follow Jesus, but they don't know who he is. It's so ironic to me that growing up in the church that I grew up in chased me away from Jesus. And of course, as soon as I was out of my parental control and I wasn't forced to go to church, I didn't for a while. In fact, if Jesus hadn't shown me himself in a different way, I probably never would have ever darkened the doors of a church ever again. I never would have. But what I came to see was that what I was rejecting wasn't him. It's just somebody was wearing his name, but they weren't acting. I didn't know him at all. I had no idea what he was like. And so I don't blame people if they don't want to follow. I started to say it was really ironic that in those days, the last thing in the world I ever wanted to do was be a pastor. I'm still not real wild about it. I'm just doing it because Jesus asked me to. And he's making it worth my while in every way by just being with me and blessing what I'm doing. But you know why I didn't want to be a pastor? I didn't want to wear a suit. I didn't want to like the kind of music those guys liked. I didn't want to have to marry the kind of woman that they were married to. I just was pretty much, the whole thing was a total turnoff to me. So you know what he did? He just said, okay, let's just shove all that stuff out of the way. What about me? He said, do you want to know me? Well, sure. It's just church I don't like. I have nothing against you, Jesus. And the more that I came to know him, the more I just fell crazy in love with him, which I am still doing to this day, day by day. It's exponential. And then I've discovered something. There are lots of people that know him that are different than me culturally. They wear different clothes, they like different kinds of music, but when we talk to one another, there's an instant bonding that happens between us when I realize they know the same Jesus that I know. And it's not a cultural, external thing. And go figure, here I am, I'm a pastor. Go figure. And you know what I love? I love that we don't look like we should be part of the same group. It looks like you scooped a net through town, grabbed a bunch of people, dumped them in a building, stirred them all up, and there is no demographic. Because Monica's homesick, I can talk about her and she can't defend herself, but before she started coming to the church, Bill, her husband, had done some work on it, and he and I just hit it off instantly. And, you know, he's a short-haired Yankee, you know, and we don't look like we should be best friends. But he loves Jesus, and I love Jesus. So he kept going home and telling her about our church. And she would say, I don't want to go to the hippie church. I don't want to go. And of course, I thought, well, nobody but Bob and I look even remotely like a hippie. She just didn't know. And of course, she didn't think that way anymore. You come in and you find people that, when Jesus is the common denominator, and you know the real Jesus. All that other stuff is really pretty immaterial. Why did you say that, Bob? Because the question that Jesus is always asking people is, will you follow me? Jesus never once ever invited people to church. He always invited people to himself. And if you can't find a church where you can walk closer to Jesus, don't go. And that's true of this place as well. Unless you are learning to know the real Jesus and walk with him here, don't come. It's a waste of time. Because Jesus always invited. He invited these men to abandon self-centeredness because they wouldn't be able to go the same direction he was going. It's going to involve pain and inconvenience and even shame temporarily before they turn the whole world upside down. But he said, you're going to have to follow. I'm not going to follow you. He said, you're going to need to be a follower. And then I love what he says in verse 25. It's one of those reasons that he gives why it's just a logical choice. And I think the fact that it comes right on the heels of what he said to Peter. Peter, who had a different idea about where it was going. Peter, looking at it from only a human standpoint, says, hey, Jesus, come on. Bad self-image here. You're underestimating your appeal. Jesus, think positive. I am the Messiah. Just say this over and over, Jesus. I am the Messiah. I am the Messiah. I get to Jerusalem. Everyone's going to love me every day. In every way, I'm getting better and better. But just keep saying that to yourself, Jesus, because this whole scenario that you've laid out about them rejecting you, beating you up, putting you to that ain't going to happen. And Jesus reacts very harshly to that. We talked about that last week. Why would you react harshly? Because he was about to do the hardest thing that he'd ever done, and it's hard when your friends are making it more difficult to follow. So he said, get out of my way. Right now you're not acting like my friend, you're acting like an adversary. Peter didn't think he was an adversary. He thought he was telling Jesus something for his own good. I've gotten very bad advice from people who thought they were encouraging me. We talked about that last week as well in greater detail. So he tells them, whoever wants to save his life will lose it. But by contrast, whoever loses his life for me will find it. And let's spend some time on that because there's some really fat words in there. Whoever wants to save his life. The word save is the word for it means to rescue from harm or to protect or to preserve from harm. And the verb is continuous action, meaning continuous habitual action, meaning if the way you're living your life is to protect yourself, you're just going to lose that life. I had to circle the word life. It's not the normal word. In fact, my NIV study Bible says, or soul. And that's the way this Greek word is most oftenly translated. The word is psuche. It's the word we get psychology from and the word we get psyche from, P-S-Y-C-H-E, psuche in Greek. It is the word for our core self. It's used in three different ways. It's used of our core self, our soul, or it also is used of our earthly life. So Jesus says, if the way that you're living your life is to preserve the real you, the core you, you're just going to lose it. You can't protect yourself. And I want to talk about this for a minute because I have seen some people that I love make some really, really bad choices in the name of protecting themselves. I've watched women abandon their families because they said, well, I'm losing myself. The only way I'm really going to find out who I am is to think about me first. You know what? Nobody believes you when you're making that choice, when you tell them you're not going to find yourself, you're just going to mess everything up, and by the time you get down the road far enough to realize you didn't find yourself, other people are going to, and yourself, are going to have to pay the consequences of that choice. And some of us have been there, and some of us have done that and found that it was absolutely true. Self-protection is the opposite of love in relationship. You can't love other people without being vulnerable. You can't. Sorry. It's one of the reasons I didn't want to be a pastor. Because I don't trust people. I've been hurt by people. I have sheep bites all over my body. Why in the world would I want to go in a sheep pen and do that for a living? And I know that there's no way you can do it with Jesus' heart without being hurtable, without being vulnerable. You can't. If you distance yourself to protect yourself, you're never going to touch anybody's heart. Self-protection becomes a prison. And you don't wind up protecting yourself anyway. But what if you don't know that the most loving heart in all of the universe cares about you intimately, has a fabulous plan for your life? The one who made you and designed you knows what you could grow into. What if you don't know that that's true? And it's a big, bad, scary world. And when you try to fix your life and make your life stable, everything falls apart. And so you ask your friends for advice, and they're just as messed up as you are, and they're all tanking out anyway. What do you do if you don't know that you have somebody to turn to? Well, you do what I did. You move to an island, and you just gather yourself in, and you just say, okay, no one's going to touch me. I'm just going to protect myself. We did a survey one time of how many people in our church that their default is to be a hermit. If God said, okay, just do whatever you want, we'd be out of here. I would think most of us would be living somewhere on an island or up in the woods somewhere, and we'd be hermits. But a lot of that comes from fear and disillusionment and frustration with people. The self-help section of bookstores, and I'm a bookstore guy, the self-help section is crowding out every other section. People, I see people all the time, my heart always aches for them, because they're hoping somebody will write a book that will tell them how to do it, because nobody they know knows how to do it, and they don't know how to do it. And Jesus is saying here, it's always going to be that way as long as you are trying to protect yourself. You're just going to lose it. You will be unsuccessful. The flip side of that coin is, he says, when you give yourself to me, when you lose yourself, the word lose is the opposite of the word save. When you give yourself to me, then you're going to find, and he uses the same word, psuche, then you'll find your real life, who you really are. Jesus says, hey, don't worry about your real self. I made your real self. I know you. Oh, but nobody else does. That's okay. Nobody else needs to. I'm your creator. I know you. I made you. I used to think that if I became a Christian, it was going to be sort of like being a Mooney, that you're going to have to wear the same outfit everybody else did and the same haircut, and you're just going to have to be a zombie, basically, because that was all the Christians that I knew. You've probably figured out by now, I don't like being like everybody else. That's why I love our church. I just love that I look out here, and most of you guys don't look anything like me. We like different kinds of music. We like different kinds of colors. I really think that's wonderful, because the thing that holds us together is we love Jesus. And he's the one that made you, and he's the one that made me. I do know people who have gone through their whole life and never known who they were supposed to be, because they haven't come to him. So what happens when you do give yourself to him? I love this verb, whoever loses his life for me will find it. It's a great word. I'm sorry, Sandra, I didn't write the word down. I just wrote the definition down. The Greek dictionary says it means to discover or obtain for one's self. And then in parentheses it says, like hidden treasure. Isn't that great? Jesus says, give your life away. Stop trying to protect yourself. Stop trying to put all your energy into trying to fulfill yourself. Just let yourself go to me. Don't worry. I know what you're supposed to be. And what you're going to find is going to be like hidden treasure. There was stuff that I loved before I met Jesus that was killing me. It was like cancer. And when I came to him, he just said, you know, I love you. I got the best for you, but that stuff's got to go. It'll destroy you. It will kill you. It'll destroy you. And one of those things was bitterness. Bitterness, he said, isn't protecting you. It's killing you. It's like you drinking the rat poison and thinking the rat's going to die. No, you're dying from the inside out. You got to dump that. Other things, he said, you got to dump that. But you know what? Constantly to this day blowing me away is the stuff that I didn't have to dump. What's blown me away is the closer I've come to Jesus, the good things in my life have gotten way, way better. and all the stuff that I really loved, I've discovered there is nothing in the world like being out in God's creation. And I've always grown up being an outdoors guy. I love to ski, I love to sail, I love to hike, I love to camp out. But there's nothing like being out there in close fellowship with the one who made it. Right, Bob? That's why he goes out in the boat every morning that he can, to spend that quiet time with Jesus. Why? Well, be with him and you'll find out why he made it. The Bible says in the Psalms he made it to talk about himself, to communicate to us about what he's like. So it's exactly the opposite of a sterile life that I thought when I was just looking at church people. Jesus said, look, you're just going to lose everything if you put all your energy into trying to protect yourself. You'll lose it. You'll die alone. Yeah, maybe you'll protect yourself from the potential of somebody hurting you, but then all you have as an alternative is you'll die alone. And so you're not really protecting yourself at all. You can try to protect yourself financially. It won't work. I promise you it won't work. But it becomes bondage. It becomes a worse prison. Because what then if you, what if you miss something? What if you can't hang on? When you just fling the control over to Jesus and you throw yourself to him and you see what he begins to do in your life. First thing you do is you say, what was I thinking? C.S. Lewis said it in the most eloquent way I've ever read. He said, aim at the earth and you lose heaven. Aim at heaven and you get the earth thrown in along with it. It's part of the deal. That's what Jesus is saying. Aim your life, aim your energy toward your Creator, toward his rule in your life. Relinquish ownership, trust him. That's why we spend so much time talking about God's heart. I'm not going to follow somebody I don't trust. I might surrender to God just because he's big enough to beat me up, but I won't love him and I won't trust him. Lots of people like that. I used to be that way. But you know, something happens when you begin to really know his heart and know what he's like. The rigor mortis of your fingers on the steering wheel starts to loosen, and you find it easier to let go. And then he kind of blows your mind with what he has in store. 1 Corinthians chapter 4 says, everything that we see is temporary. And the stuff that we can't see is the eternal stuff. And so we fix our eyes on what is unseen. Here's what I've found out. When I have done that, I've lived my life for him. He blesses even the temporary stuff. It comes and it goes. A few years ago, I lost everything. A piece of property and a house worth almost $1 million. I had tons of money coming in from royalties as a songwriter. I lost it all. The only thing I had left was Jesus and some of you. A few years before that, I lived in a 57 Chevy. And everything I owned fit in the trunk. It wasn't even a cool 57 Chevy. Three quarters of it were cool, and the other part of it looked like it got sideswiped by an army tank. And it was my house. And I would park it down at the beach where they had public showers so I could take a shower. But I had Jesus. And that was only for a while. Jesus was forever. The 57 Chevy was only for a while. How do you know? Paul said, I have learned in whatever state I'm in to be content. I've learned the secret of contentment, he said. I can do all things through him who gives me the strength. How did he learn that? Reading a book? No, he learned it by experience. Jesus is saying, you know, go for it. Try to protect yourself, Peter. Try to set up the kingdom. Good luck, buddy. Ain't gonna work. Or if you want to be with me, so just give yourself up to me. Then you'll discover every day will be a daily discovery of who you really are, the real you. That's when you find your real self. Can I say this to parents? You don't know who the real self of your children really is. You might know them better than anybody else, but you don't know them the way God knows them. So you might need to let go of them, to let them find him, to be the center of their lives. It might go a different direction maybe than where you would like it to go, but it will go in the best direction. And there's more than one story, not just in my experience, but in the Bible, of people who seemed like they were going way, way, way far away, and they ran into Jesus as soon as they got there, and he fulfilled his plan for their life anyway. So there's a lot of applications to this in our life. And I want to look at verse 26 because I think these are really good questions. I've still got some time left.